into Seattle. It was raining, pouring down, raining. And they got me ready to go on a cab up to the hospital. And Seattle looked so big and all these wires, you know. And that was such a really sad feeling again, you know, leaving that boat and going to the unknown, to the strangers.
Did the nurse go with you the whole time? So
I don't believe she did. She just, you know, gave the taxi driver directions of what to do, where to take us and all that, and who would meet us at the hospital and there. Then of course they got us ready and took us to our own rooms. Then go up there. Here you come to a great big building, this brick building, just looked so big and so cold. And but they put me in a room with other girls. First 2 days might have been really hard and sad, but got acquainted. And they did a lot of things to entertain the children. Like first thing on Sunday morning, you had somebody come and sing a hymn for you. That's where I first learned my hymn.
Oh, really?
A hymn, yeah. And I always remember this little old lady coming and just singing at the top of her voice, and I just loved it. First heard my hymn. And then an elder man would come around with Bibles and quoting scripture, and he told us if we want to earn a Bible, we would learn some verses, and he would give us a Bible. So that's how I earned my first Bible. And then another gal would come and tell us a Bible story, you know. And then we also had some friends from a certain church who visited the children. And those were great people. And they were faithful doing that every Sunday. So that made it nice. And then we had a lot of entertainment during the week too, you know. So we just became home again.
Yeah. How long were you there?
I was there 11 months.
11 months? And did they do something to
I had surgery on both of my hips. Not at one time. I had my first surgery in my right hip. And I was in a cast for 4 months. And then did another, then had to. My right leg is stronger than my left leg, okay? Because I behaved myself. I stayed still in my bed.
Is that the one they did first?
Yes, they did first, and I didn't dare do any monkey business. But you know what? My second operation was the same. I was in a cast, but the kids would dare me to get up, stuff like that, and I did. And I really think that's why my left leg is weaker than the other, because it is. My right one is definitely stronger than the other. I have a tendency to drag my left leg.
So you have just a little limp now. If you went and had that surgery, what would you have been?
I don't know how much I limped before the surgery, but you know, years later I was having some trouble, and I went to see Dr. Bob, and he got my records from the orthopedic hospital, and it so happened, he says, Nina, the doctors that worked on you were my instructors. They were
really?
Bone specialists. So we had a nice little conversation, and he looked at my chart, and he says, you know, they did a beautiful job. He said, your condition, with that type of condition, even with surgery, there is a real bad limp, and he showed me. He says, you're very, very fortunate in this, even though you have a limp, it isn't as bad as it's supposed to be with that type of a condition. So that made me feel good, you know, to think that if he was a doctor that knew, you know, so. So I think it helped me to hear that, mm-hmm. that I should be thankful.
Yeah.
That I can even walk.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as I got older, I wasn't so conscious of my limp. I was just mm-hmm. thankful that I could still walk. I could still do a lot of things, you know. And but it was the teen years that were hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as teenagers, how we go through those times.
Mm-hmm.
Feel sorry for ourselves.
Oh, that reminds me, speaking of teenagers, I wanted to ask you about sex. And the attitude towards sex is, you know, in your community, and was this something that your parents would have been comfortable talking to you about, or
well,
how was that?
Of course, they discouraged it, you know.
Premarital sex.
Premarital. Mm-hmm. Encouraged it to wait till you got married. Of course, though, alcohol had been introduced.
Oh, had they already? Yeah,
yeah. And that's when I think that fell on the wayside.
Mm-hmm. And it changed, began to change the values.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. But somehow the message got through to me, and I just never.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, and I read books too, and I thought, no way,
uh-huh.
you know,
uh-huh.
I'm gonna wait.
Yeah.
So I didn't, and I somehow was sensitive. I watched the behavior and attitude of a fellow. You know, what was mm-hmm. the reason for wanting to be with me or what?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
and. If that wasn't good, then
mm-hmm.
no way. It's stayed away.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm. Something else I'm going to ask you about at that time. Most communities have their prostitutes somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember looking at an interview Gary had, and this man he was interviewing talked about the red light district in Kodiak at that time. Did your community have any... thing like that?
Not in our village.
Yeah,
but I do remember it here in Kodiak.
In Kodiak.
That was during the war, especially. Mm-hmm. Oh, there's always a long line.
Yeah, that's what he said.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't seem to.
Mm-hmm. But your town was small enough. That that wasn't a problem. Or whenever these visiting ships came in, did they cause any kinds
well,
of problems?
No. No, I think our community was just too small,
mm-hmm.
you know, for that.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, during the war, you know, we had service boys just a little ways from the village there in the Fog Neck, and the gals, I wasn't old enough, would go up, like mm-hmm. up to the Letnik, where the army camp was for mm-hmm. dances and stuff, but.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, I was too young. My mm-hmm. mother would not allow me,
mm-hmm.
so I never went up there. And I always remember, Val, that one year, there was five girls that went up there. The boats came after them, you know,
mm-hmm.
and there was an accident. All those five girls drowned, some of the sailor boys. Yeah.
Oh, my. That for five girls from your village.
Yeah.
That
just
would be a big tragedy. It
was
would touch
big,
everybody.
Big tragedy for the village.
When you were a child, did the kids play in the water, or did they kind of keep away from the boats? As far as I'm just imagining, kids living near the water, getting out in a skiff and paddling around.
We played in the water. We, you know, mm-hmm. we learned to swim in the ocean water.
Oh, you learned to swim?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, I remember my girlfriends and I going off to a little place there where we felt nobody would watch us and practice our swimming.
Uh-huh.
And that was fun.
Okay, I'm kind of looking over my notes to see what else I... Do you think the climate was any different then than it is now?
I think so. I think we had our seasons then.
Mm-hmm.
We had our fall, our winter, and we had a spring, in a summer. Mm-hmm. The reason, well, like fall was a nice time until winter came. Then when it got winter, it was really winter, okay, cold mm-hmm. and snow mm-hmm. and all that. And then, of course, spring came, we had spring. I mean, we have pictures to prove that I had birthday parties outdoors in the spring, in April.
Oh, really?
Grass mm-hmm. was green, it was warm mm-hmm. out.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it doesn't
mm-hmm.
get more green now.
No,
June,
no,
uh-uh.
It's just totally different, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I say, there were seasons, but now, you know, it's from winter to summer.
It seems that way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What did you use for heat in your home?
Wood stoves. We had wood stoves.
And you, mm-hmm. what were the trees? The spruce like we
uh-huh,
have now?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. People, that's what they did. The men did in the wintertime. They stored up their mm-hmm. wood. Mm-hmm. And we had two, like the cook stove and then a heater.
And what was the heater?
The heater to... Well, when real cold days came, then you lit that one the winter time.
It was wood also?
Yeah, it was wood mm-hmm. also. Yeah, that's all we had.
Never had coal?
No, mm-hmm. huh? Mm-hmm. Until oil came, then they switched to mm-hmm. oil. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We carried our water.
Oh, but did you have a well in the town? Or
no, we lived close to a river.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
We just carried it from the, mm-hmm. from the river, the buckets.
Did you boil it before you used it, or was
we
it?
Had chai. I think there was times my mother would boil it.
Mm-hmm. Maybe certain times a year.
Yeah, summertime. Mm-hmm. I think when there's little bugs or whatever in mm-hmm. there, she felt we needed to
mm-hmm.
Boil it. But I don't remember people getting sick.
Mm-hmm. By spring, were you pretty low in food supplies, or were you able to?
By spring, of course, we'll see what people did, Val, in the fall of the year after fishing. Mm-hmm. People would get cased lots and store up for the winter. Canneries would allow them to do that, mm-hmm. you know, and pay when they start fishing.
When they fished again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's the way they did. And then by the time spring came, then the canneries reopened again, then you could buy from the canneries.
Now, I know at some point in Alaska, all the fishing rights were tied up by canneries, by Seattle, by the bigger corporations. Was that the case when you were a kid where you couldn't fish on your own, or did you? Well, maybe they could fish on their own, but I don't think you could sell your fish except to the canneries. They had a lot of control over it.
I think it just depended on what cannery you were fishing for.
Uh-huh.
The canneries kind of took care of the people and saw to it that they had their boats mm-hmm. and their fishing sites, mm-hmm. you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, then they would sell their fish to that cannery.
Yeah. So that's pretty much the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This might have been earlier than I'm thinking about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Another thing you mentioned was alcohol. Could that be purchased in your village in a fog market?
Eventually, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Before that, people made their own, you know, home brew, but that didn't happen too often. Because it was expensive, you know, sugar is, you had to have sugar to make that, that malt to do
mm-hmm.
it. So,
mm-hmm.
so it was just on some occasions, special occasions, they did that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the store-bought alcohol was introduced and
mm-hmm.
people started buying that.
And you eventually had a place in your community where you could buy it? Was that at a store or a tavern?
Yeah, one of the stores got a license mm-hmm. to purchase
mm-hmm.
So people could buy that.
Mm-hmm. And did that become a problem right away with drunkenness?
Maybe not right away, but finally, you know how alcohol goes and started causing a lot of problems.
Mm-hmm.
their arguments, their fighting, and those were not so good. I hated those times when. Of course, in my village, it wasn't the whole village. There were some homes that did not indulge, you know, so that made it nice. And then when they had no money, of course, they didn't drink. The bad times were in the fall of the year when people made money.
Right after fishing.
Right after fishing, and that's when there was a lot of drinking.
So. Okay. Forget what I was going to ask. Well, while I'm thinking of that, I'll ask you about holidays. Oh, I know what I was going to ask you, and I'll ask you before. Then, I'll ask you about Christmas. How did you? I know what I'm going to ask you again. Every time I think of Christmas, I remember the influence of the church. You said there was a Russian church in the village, and you heard your first hymns at 11 when you went to that hospital in Seattle. Did your family participate in the Orthodox Church?
Oh, yeah. They were Orthodox.
You were Orthodox. Okay, and did that have quite a bit of influence on your life?
I don't know, Val. Right to begin with, I was never really. I went through the forum to, you know, and attended, and somehow that type of worship just kind of made me feel sad most of the time.
Was it in English or in?
No, it was all. That's why I think.
Oh, it was in Russian.
Yeah, because I didn't understand anything, you know, Now I can't say. Now there were some services I think were beautiful, you know, like at Easter time. I think I liked those, the singing, whatever, and then Christmas time they did sing some Christmas songs, English
in English,
and that was nice. I think, to me, the good memories are people visiting one another, sharing with one another, you know. And Christmas time, what they do, and some villages still practice it, is go around, start what they call starring, and sing in each home, you know. And that was nice, and I participated in that, because I liked it. I liked to sing, so I participated in that. That was real fun. And we always got some treats. So that was good. And Easter time, I remember the village getting, just about the whole village getting together in the parsonage and having a potlatch. And those were good times.
Oh, did you have potlatches frequently?
Well, I remember that time, Easter time is when they did. If we did another time, I don't remember. And weddings were really special times, too. They used to have 3-day celebrations.
3 days?
So a lot of activities going on, you know, the dancing and the eating and all that. So that's where I remember being a part of that and enjoying that, too.
Now you grew up in an English speaking home, didn't you? Except
English,
for your grandparents, or
no,
did your
English
parents?
And my mom and dad spoke Aleutic a lot.
Oh, did they?
But to us kids, they spoke English.
And if there was there any Aleutic used in the school?
You couldn't.
And what would happen if you did?
Get punished. Okay, see, in my mother's time is when they were punished for it.
Oh, okay. So that's why they raised you speaking
English. They made sure that we spoke English and warned us not to speak because they didn't want us to get punished, you know, for it. So we didn't dare.
Do you think that, now I know now in your life that you have a lot of pride in your culture.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that you had pride in your culture as a young person?
In as much as I knew how, yes, I think so. My mother did her part to bring us up in that that way.
Yeah.
Of course, see, where we kind of dropped off is when we moved to Kodiak. It was so different. And living in this, of course, being a bigger community, kind of strayed away from that and went more the Western way. But now it's recapturing it and doing what we can. We're really enjoying what we're recapturing today. And the whole family feels that way. Just really knowing who you are and being proud of who you are and encouraging your people. And that's why I am involved. And Val, the more I see, it takes sobriety to for our people to know that they do have a culture, that they are good people, and they want to be that. And so that's where I come in to encourage to be a role model in that. And it's good to be seeing that there's people out there that really want sobriety, and there are those that are sober today. So I'd like to see more, but it's a beginning.
Do you feel that the Native people are moving in that direction?
Yes, more and more we see. And I've been learning learning some things to what we need to do more and more with people that are really struggling. Like, I think we need, be nice to have our own Native treatment centers. And because those are being more effective, you know. And just like with the Native New Life too, that's really helping me to see how our Native people are responding to that more than anything else.
Are they?
And spiritually, yeah. And my husband now gives a devotional every now and then, and the people just love it. What he does is pick out maybe a man of God in the Bible and how that man lived and what he did. I just love it. Just simple. Just simple. When the Native people come to know the Lord, it's such in a childlike way, and their faith, you know, and it's really beautiful to see how they look at that, and it's quite different. And it's real, real to them, and they believe it. You know, if God said it, then that's it. no big thing.
That brings me, talking about the spiritual, and I want to talk about that a little bit more, and then we'll quit. But, in your village, did you have shaman or?
Yeah, I remember. At one time, you wouldn't get me to talk about it, but I've learned in the last few years that there were some that were okay, and those that were not okay. And as I look back, I can see the two. There was one shaman who was very godly minded, loved the Lord and the people, and he would not do no harm, but good, kind of a medicine man too, in a good way. And then I also know the other that was not good. And he was quite different than this other. He meant harm, to do harm, and just that way, the good and the bad, the good and the evil.
Now, you said that you heard your first hymn in Seattle at age 11. And is that okay? So when you were in Seattle, you enjoyed this singing Christian songs. And, can you tell me a little bit more about your spiritual life from that point on?
When I came back, that was so good, and I looked forward to every Sunday. And when I was leaving the hospital, I thought, and maybe prayed in my own way, that we would have something like that one day in our village. You know, because we hadn't had anything like that. And it was two or three years later than a couple missionary girls came, and I got to know more songs, learn the Bible, do a lot of singing and hearing the word, and I was all for it.
So at some time did you, I don't want to say consciously, but did you make a decision about your spiritual life?
Yes. I remember hearing the word, the Bible says that all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. Even though I was just a young girl and never really indulged in anything bad, you know, or whatever, God's word said it, and I believed it. And God's word also said that, you know, that verse, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish but have everlasting life." And I wanted that, and it was shown to me how I can accept Christ into my heart. And at first, I did it by myself, okay? I'd pray and ask the Lord to come into my heart. And I believe he did. But what gave me the real assurance was just before I got married, this gal, I woke up one morning and I had to have it settled. Am I or am I not? So I went to her, and she quoted to me that he that hath life, no, he that hath
such, the son.
His son hath life. That was it, and I was sure then that I was a child of God. And from that time on, I walked with the Lord.
In the earlier time when you were, before you were sure, how old were you as a teenager?
I was a teen, beginning my teen years.
And when you met Pete, was he a Christian?
No, he wasn't. He was same background as I was. And he had gone to Sunday school also, so he knew. And see, I made this decision just before I got married, okay? And the preacher shared with me, now that I had accepted Christ and was determined to walk with him regardless, that pointed out that the scripture, "Be unequally yoked together with unbelievers." And he did it in such a nice way, and I thought, yeah. And so so I approached Pete with it. I said, well, I told him, unless you become a Christian, I'm not going to marry you. and I think we had our fight then, and he stomped and walked away, and I thought, oh, well, that's the way he feels, okay. I felt bad, of course, you know, because here we were planning to get married. And then he came back again, and we talked about it, and we went to church. It was on a Sunday evening, and there was an invitation given, and Pete was really bothered with that, you know. And so he was going to tell me that he had accepted the Lord, and he was going to make a pretense of it. But that night, the preacher, the second time in his life he ever did, he went down to ask Pete if he really wanted to come forward to accept Christ. So Pete did, and it was very real in his quiet manner, the way he accepted the Lord. And and later on he told me that he was going to make a pretense of it, you know. And I always tell him he's made a real good pretense of it now for 48 years. So we both started off in the right track mm-hmm. with the Lord, determined mm-hmm. to walk with him and to live for him and raise our family for him. And I think the Lord has honored that and blessed our lives mm-hmm. many, many different ways.
Okay. Well, I just want to go back to these two things. One was books and the other was music. Did you have books and music in your life as a child?
Didn't have no music in books, in book forms, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. we had phonographs, you know, those hand-winding phonographs and records. That's how I learned a lot of the songs like that. And then the radio came
mm-hmm.
and learned through there. Now, I liked books. I got a hold of whatever books I couldn't read a lot. Mm-hmm. I liked reading and I learned a lot.
Did you have storytelling in those days?
Storytelling? I remember as a family, we used to go visit our relatives or our friends,
mm-hmm.
and that's when the older people would share stories mm-hmm. and that we would listen as children.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess we liked it. I don't remember being bored.
Mm-hmm.
They were so interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got in on that. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. it was a good time. I remember always being happy that we were going to go visit.
Mm-hmm. Did they have dances when you were a kid?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did they? In people's homes mostly?
Well, we had kind of a dance hall there that we used. Uh-huh. And we had musicians. Native people are very gifted.
Uh-huh.
A lot of them learned to play accordion, guitar, mm-hmm. mandolin,
mm-hmm.
even the violin.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they put on some good dances.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we had that.
Okay. I guess they didn't have movies then yet, did they?
I remember somebody came into the village and brought silent movies first.
Oh, mm-hmm.
You know, and they would invite the whole village. The whole village knew when there was going to be a movie and everybody turned out for
uh-huh.
it. So somebody, you know, brought it in.
Uh-huh.
So it was brought to us every now and then.
Oh. Excuse me.
And then, of course, Kodiak got it. And when mm-hmm. we came to Kodiak, the first thing we did was go to the movies.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, you know, I was in, I'm now a teacher of the villages when I was working at Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And something I noticed that I never saw anybody outside and during the day. I suppose in the evening too, but I wonder. If that's the influence of TV on the villages.
Oh, definitely.
I didn't expect that. But I remember thinking that in particular, that I didn't see hardly anyone outside. Now, that wasn't true. I think it may be in Akia. The kids were out playing more. And, of course, that could have to do with other things, too,
mm-hmm.
the weather. Mm-hmm. But
yeah. No, I think TV has had a lot of influence. And the village especially, and that's not good because they're just watching anything and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then taking away what they could be doing and playing outdoors,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I think that's, how would you say, the evil of the day and the time,
mm-hmm.
taking away,
mm-hmm.
you know. But how you can change that, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was thinking of that book that their Venus daughter, there seemed to have been a lot of visiting back and forth. She went over every day to other ladies' houses and had tea.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, that was a big thing.
You that kind of socialization.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We socialized in that way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How did you do laundry then?
We had washboards.
Uh-huh.
You know those?
Yeah.
And that's the way I started mm-hmm. washing clothes.
Mm-hmm.
And we had our big wash tubs.
Mm-hmm.
And all day long type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And drying outdoors when it was a nice day. Most people would try to get their laundry done in those days, getting dried outdoors.
Of course, you didn't have as much laundry then, did you?
You didn't change every day.
Yeah, that's what I mean. We didn't either. Mom washed once a week.
Yeah, you didn't change every day. Yeah. I don't know today. We wash clean clothes most of the time.
Okay, well, thanks. Can you think of anything else you want to share? Otherwise, I think I've pretty well covered everything that... I just wonder what the population of a fog neck was at its highest point. I think they had 300.
Oh, I think all of that, maybe around the time when I came around, and maybe even bigger before then.
Mm-hmm. Well, Nina, I want to thank you for doing this interview with me. It's been interesting to me, and appreciate you sharing maybe from your own life. Experiences.
I'm always ready to share. I don't believe in keeping anything like this from anybody, so I'm always available to do that. So I'm glad to do it for you, especially them. There's no longer a fog. Mm-hmm. It washed away. People moved away from it. Wow.
Oh, wow. You weren't there in 1964 when they had the quake, but I'm sure that a lot of people were. Did they lose a lot of lives that time?
Not